Hey, and thanks for listening. This is Conversations, the True Voice Media podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Gibbard. Let's get started. This is episode 15 of Conversations, the True Voice Media podcast. Today, I have on the line with me Julio Viscovich, and I'm going to let him introduce himself. Go ahead.
Jeff, thanks a lot for having me, and it's a true pleasure to always get a chance to chat with you and the listeners. So for those who haven't met me, my name's Julio Viscovich. I'm up here in sunny Vancouver, Canada. Hopefully you didn't note the sarcasm there. But I am a social selling pioneer and one of the first folks that jumped on the bandwagon and started social selling. I spent a few years at Hootsuite really crafting social selling, getting a chance to really A-B test a few things, and really got a sense of social selling's here to stay, and I'm ready to run with it, and I'm really happy to be on board here with you, Jeff, today to chat about it.
Excellent. Excellent. That is very concise, and now I want to layer on top a little something-something from me about this. So, Julio, you and I met at the Vegas Social Media Strategy Summit, and I'm not sure if I told you this while we were there, but you know, I go to a lot of conferences, and I speak at a lot of conferences and hear a lot of people on the social this or social that shtick. And you know, some people could look at social selling as sort of a buzzy term or whatever, but here's where I want to come in with it. I rarely meet people that I feel teach me a lot about an industry or about this particular industry, about social media. And when I sat down with you in the span of 20 minutes, I think you showed me four or five things that just completely blew me away. And I immediately had just a tremendous amount of respect for you. So when you started talking about your positioning and social selling and what you do, you know, my immediate reaction was definitely a little skepticism, because that's just – it comes with the territory when you do what we do and you interact with so many people. But the minute you started showing me some of the things that you're working on and ways that you approach this, I was instantly in on it. So you know, I'm really glad that you came on the podcast today, because I think you're going to provide a tremendous amount of value for people out there that don't necessarily get how the sales landscape has changed. And I think, you know, just from what I've seen in the interactions we've had, you have a ton of really practical stuff that'll give people a really concrete way of looking at how sales has changed and what they can do about it.
Exactly right. Exactly right. And that's what I intend to do, Jeff. And I think that why you and myself hit it off so well is because we both really appreciate adding value and really, you know, not only talking the talk and walking the walk. And that's really what I like to do and really what I pride myself on. So let's do it today.
Yeah, let's. So I think the first thing is, let's just set the stage. One, can you just very briefly explain for those listening, what is social selling and how can you define it and differentiate it and distinguish it against traditional selling? Why is it different? Why does it deserve its own term? Which we'll get into the terms in a moment. But tell us about that. What is it and why is it different?
Well, really, it just represents a shift that's happening in, you know, buying, especially in the B2B space, which I'll talk about today. And the shift has happened in the power that the buyers now have. And, you know, the sheer amount of information that's available now on the internet has changed the game completely. Years before, people who are buying products, they used to put a tremendous amount of value on what the sales rep could tell them about the product, what they could tell them about the space, what they could tell them about the industry. But that's all changed with the invention of the internet. I mean, the amount of information that's being put out there each and every day is astronomical, and it's there for people to find. Anytime I want to buy something, that's exactly what I do. I Google it. I go to YouTube. I check videos out. I find out enough information about the product to make a general decision on my own, or at least an educated decision. And B2B buyers are doing that exact same thing. They're going on there. They're finding information about the product. And what that's doing is putting far more importance on the sales rep to go out and add value, to be a thought leader, to be a trusted advisor, and to be a consultant. And what social selling is and what it does is it empowers sales reps to now leverage social media and social data to make the buying decision and the buying process a much better place to be these days.
So you kind of remove some of that information exchange that happens, you know, or at least used to happen in the sales process. And instead, the buyer comes in armed with a lot more information, which allows the seller to focus more on the relationship, but also to look for new and unique ways to add that additional value to the person who's buying something. Does that about sum it up?
That sums it up great, and that's exactly what's happening.
So let me ask you that. Here's the big question about that then. And, you know, I don't even mean for this to be teed up, but it's truly the question that I want to ask you. Where does the line where marketing ends and sales begins? Because it's so often that when I come into a client, I see that they're having an issue in, let's say, lead generation and closing sales. But the techniques and tactics that we use to, you know, add value there and help to alleviate those problems are they tend to be very blurry about where the marketing is ending and where the sales is beginning, because oftentimes the sales tactics that we're bringing in are actually more about using marketing collateral and marketing resources that become sales resources because it's in a sales conversation. So explain to me where you think is there even a line, should there be a line, or are we into a completely blended thing that maybe deserves a new name?
You know, Jeff, thanks for bringing us down that angle, because that goes right into something I was hoping to talk about, and that is a term that I coined and actually a book that I recently published called Sellarketing. And what I talk about in Sellarketing, what I mean by that, is that blend, is that gray area that's now been created. Years past, there was quite a divisible line, and you described exactly what that is. Marketing creates documents, they, you know, shift it over to sales, they can share that information. But over the last little while, we've seen such a shift in trust, and I always point to the Edelman's Trust Barometer, which is such a great study that they put out each year that really looks at how you make your purchase decision, who you trust, and where and how much value you put in that information. And 3-4 years ago, people trusted marketing materials. They went to websites. They, you know, trusted that type of information. But since then, there's been a major shift, and now who people are trusting for their, you know, for their information and to help them along with the buying decision is people who are third-party advocates, or people who don't work in the marketing department, or people who don't stand to gain firsthand from, you know, helping out or giving their review or giving their information. And now there's a huge blur, because what we're seeing now is, again, marketing having to change the way they're behaving, just like sales has had to change the way they've behaved as a result of the buyer. Marketing's job is now not so much to put out marketing material that's company specific, but it's to help these sales reps empower themselves as micro marketers. So rather than reach a certain amount of people through a marketing department, imagine empowering each and every single employee or each and every sales rep with their own unique information that they could push out there to the general public. You would be reaching so many more people. It's insane.
Yeah, I can't remember where I was that I saw this, but I think it was Liz Bullock did a case study. I think it might have been at Social Media Strategy Summit Dallas, and she talked about how in virtually every company, the aggregate reach of the employees tends to outreach and outperform that of a company branded account. So, and oftentimes when I go into a company and I'm talking to them about their social media strategy and the approach they're taking, they're very focused on their branded accounts and often overlook what kind of we're talking about here, which is that there's an immense value in empowering your staff, empowering your people with the right resources to connect to their networks and reach entirely new places that the brand might not be able to.
Exactly. And I think that's going to be the big trend in 2014 is this term called micro marketing and empowering employees and empowering sales reps to actually go out and be their own brands and put themselves out there as a thought leader. So that, as we mentioned earlier, when buyers are, you know, searching for information and building up that knowledge before they come to a sales rep, they're going to come across those little breadcrumbs that are left online by those folks. And that's how buyers are going to find those breadcrumbs, draw themselves through that content back to the sales rep, and initiate a conversation. So each and every sales rep or employee can actually go out and be their own mini lead generation.
So let me ask you this, because obviously you and I are both very big Kool-Aid drinkers in some ways, and you know, we're also both very results-driven individuals, but you know, at the same time, we do believe in the power of this stuff. We work in the field, so we see so much, and we're both so very active. But I think there are a lot of people that might listen to this and think, you know, okay, well, that's fine if you're someone who describes himself as a social selling pioneer, or if you're somebody who's an active blogger already. But like, what about me? You know, I'm not a marketer. I'm just, you know, I'm whatever. How do you build the case that you can take a company from kind of zero to hero, where you've got this, you know, empowered workforce? And if that's something that can be done, what do you think is the first step for a company that's trying to get to this point?
That's a great question, Jeff, because people are asking it every single day. And it means changing a few processes that currently exist. I mean, when you think back to how things were, you know, back in the old days when people had horse and buggies, right? I mean, everything was
childhood.
Based on that. Totally, right? But then cars came along and changed everything. They changed the way, you know, transportation was done. They changed a number of different things. And that's exactly what's happening right now with social media accessed information online. It's changing the way things have to be done. Now, what I would recommend for any business is actually appointing a team. And that might include a member from every department. And that might also include somebody like the CMO or somebody who's, you know, heavily invested in marketing and who's going to drive this. And by creating this team or a center of excellence, you can make sure that you push out small initiatives to each and every department to make sure that they're empowered to embrace social properly. So making sure that you have that team that's setting the groundwork, that's putting policies in place, that's making sure that everybody gets the right training, that's how it can be rolled out smoothly.
So let me ask you this. You know, I love the idea of this sort of, center of excellence, this team of people that is accountable for educating and opening up the pockets of knowledge that exists throughout an organization. You know, you can enable it through technology for people to share this information and have access to these resources. But do you think that this is something that really only applies as a first step to a medium or large business that has some of that extra budget to be able to put together a team dedicated to this? Or do you think that this is a shift that's so fundamental and so necessary that all companies really have to consider, you know, how they're going to make the shift towards social selling?
Yeah, I mean, I think right now what's happening is people are just making sure that the proof of concept is out there. They trust it. They see that it works. And I think that we're going to start to see a lot more budget be shifted over and make that a real possibility this year. I think companies, you know, whether they're huge companies like Oracle, who's starting to empower their entire 23,000 person sales force to actually start blogging and get out there and put themselves on social media, or whether they're a smaller company, either way, the value is so tremendous that it's definitely worth investing current resources and money there. So what I'm seeing, at least I can speak from a sales department perspective, is I'm definitely seeing a shift of budget. And it's shifting from traditional sales training, old-style sales training that, you know, previously may have worked, and it's shifting over to social selling and learning and teaching reps how they can embrace LinkedIn, how they can embrace Twitter, how can they, you know, get out there and really find information and listen to what's going on in the industry with their competitors and prospects online. It's happening right now, and I'm definitely seeing a proof of concept out there that's going to drive that shift in budget and also attention this year.
So let me ask you this about the budget, because, you know, I think we're in similar positions in kind of what we bring to the table for an organization. But one of the challenges that I think anyone in our industry has to deal with – oh, did I lose you? Three, two, one. So Julio, here's the question. Here's where I want to kind of pivot and turn with it, because, you know, you and I are in very similar positions in the value that we bring to a company and the sort of things that we have to answer for and the innovative and unique approaches that we might be recommending that are slightly foreign. Are you familiar with the Google study ZMOT, Zero Moment of Truth?
Walk me through it.
So they put out this study that basically talks about the changes in how people behave and how they go through the buying process. They look at more sources of information. There's all this different stuff. And then when – you know, it's a big, long study. We won't go too deep into it. But I look at that and I look at the concept of last touch attribution. And then you see a lot of these studies that come out sometime around the holidays or around Black Friday where they say, you know, social contributes, you know, 1%. If that, to overall sales on Black Friday or Cyber Monday or whatever. And I think what we're looking at there is that, you know, we have to be able to stand for the value of social, because I think we innately know that there's a value in connecting with people and providing resources and enriching relationships. But because things like pay-per-click marketing are so much more measurable and they're so much more easy to show through a sales funnel, What are some of the ways that you've found that you can build the case that social selling and that this approach of being more connected and using social as a tool, how are you building the case for that when it's so much more difficult to obtain hard data that shows that this is a positive ROI activity?
Yes, that is absolutely a question that I answer quite often and something that I face every day, Jeff. Everyone's asking it because you're right. Everything that involved social selling and these activities we're talking about is fairly new, and people are still figuring out how to measure it properly and show that hard ROI that you can show. But you know what? I'll tell you now, I mean, the human connection that social selling provides versus, you know, a one-way communication like a, you know, pay-per-click ad is absolute, you know, the ROI is tenfold. And the way I start by trying to show the ROI is figuring out, you know, the basic things at first. So what you're going to have to do is have your sales team work with your sales operations team to make sure that your CRM can handle what's going to be going on. So what I mean by that is there should be new custom fields created, such as leads from LinkedIn, you know, pipeline from LinkedIn, pipeline from Twitter, leads from Twitter. And what you can start to do from here is now start to figure out actually how many people are coming into the pipeline or getting into the funnel through various social channels. Mm-hmm. And not only just social in general, but if you, you know, focus on LinkedIn groups, LinkedIn, Twitter, you can really start to narrow down where the success of your activities are coming from. And you can really start to see how quickly these folks are moving through the funnel that came through social versus folks that came in through other means. And you can start to see how much success you're having with these folks. And what I'm seeing out there, and it's repeatable across the board, is that sales process and the sales cycle is happening so much quicker when people are involved in social. And that's one thing that I can stand by. And why is because it eliminates those dark periods that are traditionally associated with traditional sales, doing a phone call, having a dark period, having your next call or your next meeting booked. Now you're in there and you're having these interactions every single day, and measuring those is also key. So how many times are you being, you know, amplified online? How many times are you connecting with prospects? How many lists do you have? All these little things are ways that you can start to see how successful social selling is or how successful you're doing at social selling, and the benefits are going to show. Revenue is going to be up across the board. And what I've found is that reps who are using social selling versus those who aren't are having about a 15% more quota attainment rate. So these are all things that you can start to look at.
That's outstanding. That is absolutely outstanding that you've got, you know, that sort of experience to be able to stand on. What do you think are some of the other benefits that can come from this? I mean, you know, we can definitely talk about the ROI side of things and, you know, provided you have the right measurement systems in place, you can obviously calculate that. It's a pretty simple formula. But in working with salespeople and you're starting to show them these new tools, do you see any other sort of ancillary benefits that come from it? You know, boost in morale. I mean, I can imagine the difference between cold calling and social selling has to be massive. You know, what's been your experience with actually working with people and using social tools in a sales environment?
That's been the one thing that people have loved the most. If you ask any sales rep that's been in sales for, you know, more than 2 years, they're going to tell you the thing they hate the most is doing cold calls. And ever since I've started with social selling, every single person I've worked with has never done a cold call since. They now do something that I like to call warm calls. And what that entails is just going out and finding little pieces of information online and connecting with them first. So what I always recommend to my folks is get online before you're going to ever get on a phone with somebody. Make sure you connect with them on Twitter, connect with them on LinkedIn, retweet a tweet, favorite a tweet, and make a comment in a group to them if possible. And what that does is it starts to build a little bit of value. It starts to build a little bit of trust, and it puts you so much ahead of the people that are just still doing cold calling and sending email templates. So what that does for morale is absolutely insane. You get on the call, and you never again have to have somebody hang up, tell you they're busy, have a really rough rapport building session at the start of a call. This is all stuff that's been done previously. You've built your rapport, you've built trust, and they're expecting your call. And just having that little notion of them expecting your call is so good for morale for salespeople.
That's fantastic. So we've been talking a lot about sales in an external kind of capacity. Like, you know, we have a product, we want to match it to a buyer. But, you know, I think a lot of, and I think we, you know, we chatted a little bit about this, about, you know, Daniel Pink's most recent book, he talks, I think it's called To Sell as Human. He talks a little bit about how so many different people in business are actually in sales in some capacity, and they don't realize it because sales is more than just selling a product to somebody. It can also be getting buy-in. It can be, you know, getting the raise that you want. It could be getting a team motivated around an idea. It could be so many things. Do you see that social tools are, in your experience in working with companies, are providing a way for people to have a better ability to get what they want inside of a company, to be able to kind of sell their perspective or point of view or initiative more easily?
100%. I mean, when you think of how communication internally used to be, it was done by email. It was actually trying to think of who this company was, but it was a company in France, a tech company, who actually banned email within the organization because it was so efficient. People have been spamming with email so much. There's, you know, how many times have you been on an email thread that just never ended, that never made any sense after the second email? Yep. I mean, those are the types of things that you experience when you try and collaborate internally. And what social has done is sort of remove that element out of it, right? So, you know, whether it's an internal collaboration platform like a Yammer or a Chatter or something like that, it allows you to have little groups. So one of the things that I love about that is you can have a brain trust group, or what I like to do, and I've done this ever since social came out, is I do something that I like to call my Coliseum. And what I do is I put the people that are going to help me succeed in my social coliseum, and I interact with them daily. So what I'll do is I'll create a Twitter list with them, and these are people who have information to share, who are going to make me a smarter person, who are going to make me professionally grow. But you can also do the same things with internal groups of people who, you know, you want to, you know, pitch your ideas, sell yourself to, develop relationships with. Never before have you had a chance to really engage with the CEO of a company, any large company. It's been near impossible. Now with social, you have the ability to see, to touch, to feel those folks online and actually engage with them and actually sell your ideas. And now you can be in front of your CEO even if you can't walk in the office door. And that's some of the great things that I think social has done as far as an internal collaboration perspective.
That's interesting because, you know, as you were saying that, it got me thinking that it doesn't even have to be on a Chatter or Yammer or something like that, because you had mentioned, you know, your Coliseum list that you have on Twitter. You know, if you are at a company, it's a large company, you could very easily follow some of the C-suite on Twitter if they're on Twitter. You can follow them and connect with them on LinkedIn and use that as sort of the back channel as opposed to, you know, the influx of email that they're likely getting on a daily basis. But you can keep up with what they're doing. You can build a relationship with them using these soft touch points over social. Until now, I don't think I really even thought of that as an option. But that, I think that's actually probably a great way to have a company that's more connected to one another, is actually having them more connected to one another on social networks, not just internally.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, even for people who just have issues building rapport, just need confidence approaching somebody of a higher status within a company, now you can go out and see what they're doing on social media. You can see what kind of things they like. And now you have talking points. You have ways to approach and take something from social and make it into a real life conversation. And that's one of the things that, again, I really like about what it's doing from an internal perspective.
Yeah. No, I totally get that. I dig that. Let me ask you a couple questions. These are some, I want you to give some very practical stuff for some of our listeners in this social selling. So I have a couple questions I want to ask you. I want you to give some quick tips, if you can, on how people can go about doing some really practical things to, you know, get themselves in the game of social selling. The first one would be, you mentioned you have this list called Coliseum. And I'm a huge list maker myself. The majority of people statistically are not list makers. That being said, two pieces here? One, can you kind of build quickly the case for why you should make lists on different services that support it? And then two, what are just a couple different lists that you might suggest people create for, you know, for them to get themselves in the game in social selling?
Great question. So lists brings so much value. Anyone who's been using Twitter for any amount of time is definitely going to come to the conclusion that is a fantastic mess, and it's very hard to keep track of all the information because in 140 characters, the amount of info that's being cycled through is just impossible. So in order to make sense of all that information, that's why I build Twitter lists. And by segmenting people in those lists, I have a really good handle on different topics, different ideas, and different people. So from a social selling perspective, There's so many amazing things you can do. So the first step that I always recommend as far as Twitter lists go is building a list of your prospects, your partners, influencers in the industry, as well as competitors. And that's a really good way to start, because what you're doing is you're having an eye on your competitors, who they're talking to, if there's any potential prospects. It literally is a lead list for you. Find out who they're talking to. From a prospect's perspective, every time I touch base with someone and I feel that they might be a potential opportunity, drop them in that list, engage with them on an ongoing basis. Maybe if they're not ready to buy now, they will be down the line. And that's really the first thing that I like to do with lists. But when I've dealt with some more advanced organizations in terms of social selling, who are a little bit more mature down the pipeline, we've done some pretty cool things, such as actually going out and finding all of your competitors and segmenting them by their role in the sales team. So, for example, you have your lead development people, you have your sales reps, you have your sales engineer, you have your account manager. And each and every one of those people has a different role to play in the sales pipeline. So if I made a list of all of the lead generation people of my competitors and put them into one list, they are literally doing all the work for me and bringing leads to you. And you know by the nature of what a lead generation person does, they're touching people at the top of the sales funnel. So you know those people are starting to be interested, they may have a budget, and they definitely have not made a purchase decision yet. So it's a great place to build yourself up some leads. Conversely, if it's a sales engineer, you know they're probably in the evaluation phase of the sales process, and they're probably looking at a product and maybe some other products as well. So right now is a great opportunity to jump in and see if you can, you know, create a, the ability to oust that, you know, person away from your competitor. So some pretty cool ways of using lists.
I gotta tell you, and I say this totally affectionately, that is dirty. That is like dirty awesome though. That to think of segmenting the sales funnel in that way, and just picking off prospects that way is just dirty. Again, I say that with affection. Wow, so cool. So so do you recommend making these kind of lists across any of the platforms that enable lists, whether it be Facebook, whether it be Google Plus, Twitter? You know, do you find that that there's more success in one area than another? Is, you know, tell me what you think about as far as, like, should lists be deployed anywhere they can, where you think you might have an opportunity for social selling?
I really think so. I think lists cannot hurt because they just help segment and organize. Of course, you know, certain platforms are going to offer more opportunity. I feel Google Plus is really growing at the moment. I feel Facebook isn't so much of a social selling platform yet as far as B2B sales, only because there's still that notion of privacy. It's one of the, you know, the few social networks that actually made privacy, you know, a part of their core from the beginning. And now we're starting to see that shift towards a more public approach. And I'll see more social selling, you know, kind of build in Facebook. But right now, Twitter and LinkedIn and slowly Google Plus are, you know, making some waves. You know, obviously LinkedIn doesn't allow for list building, but what you can do is you can build saved searches as a part of their Sales Navigator products. So those are some ways that you can take the concepts of lists and Twitter and take them right into LinkedIn as well. Definitely a good recommendation.
Awesome. Let me ask you this as sort of a final step here, something that I would love, and you don't have to limit it to one. I'm just going to ask you for one though, but I'd love for you to give some practical advice for small, medium, large businesses, whatever you think really is the most relevant. A lot of the listeners for the True Voice Media podcast are, you know, small and medium sized businesses. Some of them are in the more regulated areas. That tends to be our client base. What's the one thing that you would tell someone to do at a company to get started in social selling? What's kind of the first step? What do you think that they should be doing to get themselves in this game, to see that there's value there and to kind of move the needle quickly and build the case that it should be more a part of what they do?
I mean, I think the first step for anybody is really to get on some platforms and start listening. People say, well, what platform do I start with? And then I always ask, well, who's your buyer? Let's map them out. Let's do a buyer mapping process exercise, and let's come to the conclusion of where they're most likely at. And you'll find out, are they on Facebook? Are they on Twitter? Are they on LinkedIn? Are they on Google? So figuring out where your buyers are is the first step, and getting an account on those platforms and just listening, taking 2 weeks and just listening, getting an understanding of how the conversation goes, what people are talking about, how they're talking. And get a feel for that first. I think that's, you know, generally the first step that needs to be done. And then people always, you know, okay, I'm on there, I'm listening, but what's the next step? I want to start involving myself. I want to start sharing stuff. Like, what do I share? And there's a couple really cool tools that I recommend. There's one called TrendSpotter, and it's a fantastic aggregator of news. And what it does is it gives you a real-time trending analysis score of the content. So if you had put in, say, social selling or, you know, social media marketing, whichever your term is, what it's going to do is return a whole bunch of articles that are starting to trend now. So that means that they have more potential for virality. And it also means that not a lot of people have gone out and shared that up to date. So you're going to be one of those first people that are doing it because it's just on the cutting edge of trending. So that's what I really like, and that's what I use to find the information that I share out. And when I do, I find that people are much more receptive. They're sharing it. And the more you do that, those are those content breadcrumbs that you're putting out there online that people are going to find. They're going to find that valuable information, and they're going to follow that breadcrumb right back to you and going to connect with you. And it's an opportunity. And just before I kind of close off on that idea, I just wanted to mention, you know, I was working with a client in Chicago a while back, a hotel chain, and I thought it was really interesting because they asked me the same thing. They said, how the hell do I use this Twitter thing to actually generate sales? My boss is kind of on my neck, you know, about this. He wants to see some actual ROI, some money coming in. How can I do this? So I said, do me a favor. Do a search for Need Hotel Chicago on Twitter right now. Mm-hmm. And just we found in that stream there was literally four people who were asking for recommendations or if anybody knew if there was a good hotel just off the strip or just by the airport. And I said, reach out to those people. He had a room booked by one of those four people within about 30 minutes of us having that conversation. And the minute I did that, his eyes just lit up and he knew that we had something big and he knew he could sell this up to his boss.
That's pretty outstanding. That's a really good example of it. You know, one of the examples that I've often used, it's not in a social selling context, but actually it is. I talk about it in the social listening context when I'm advocating that companies start to listen. I give this example of how one day I was standing in line at Starbucks and I just decided to, you know, post a message out. I think I checked in on Foursquare and said, like, I'm going to get a toffee nut Americano, something totally asinine, where most people would say, why would I care about that? Why is that important? And then I say, you probably wouldn't, but check this out. And I advance to the next slide, and it's a company, a restaurant that was right up the street that said, hey, why don't you come up the street and get a cup of coffee for a buck instead? And I was like, you know, we may look at all of these streams of information and all of this content that's put out there and say, yeah, it's noise. But the truth is it's everything is noise to someone, but there's value for everybody. So the tweets of, you know, I'm hungry for a taco, which is completely asinine to the vast majority of people, if you own a taco stand, is incredibly valuable. So I think it really just underscores the point that, you know, listening is one of those really high value activities that rarely gets the attention that I think it deserves in social, because everybody wants to talk about talking and creating content and engagement, but rarely do we talk about the value of listening. So I'm really glad that you stand on the soapbox with me talking about that.
Absolutely. Like, so many small businesses have made a killing off of this because it's their way to gain a competitive advantage. It's their way to eliminate economies of scale from some of the big guys. When you have just a mom and pop shop or a small to medium business located and you're very dependent on, you know, your location and folks around you, that's really, you know, there's so much power there because, especially with Twitter, they've created the ability to geo-search and actually, you know, put a latitude and longitude in and hone in. And so many businesses, I mean, I tell them, figure out what your delivery radius is. If it's 5 kilometers either way, let's drop a pin down and let's listen for people who are hungry for pizza or hungry in general. And I promise you, I mean, you're going to sell a lot of pizza.
Well,
and they always
for the Americans listening, what's a kilometer?
A kilometer. Oh, goodness. I love it. So a kilometer is about, 0.6 miles. So for you guys out there in the States. Yes, that's our measurement.
Okay,
up here
fair enough. So for anybody that needs to figure that out, I think Google has some sort of a conversion tool where you can figure out what he meant by 5 kilometers in miles. Julio, did we talk – I don't remember if we touched on, but I wanted to make sure we touched on the concept. I think we kind of briefly skated by it, but the sell-arketing and the coin that you termed. I know you said you'd coined it, but didn't you put out some sort of materials about that, either an ebook or a blog post or something like that?
I did, yes, Jeff, absolutely. So solarketing was a term that people were asking me about. So rather than, you know, constantly give the same definition over and over, I figure I'd put together a collection of tweets and actually publish a book. So it is my first book. It is called Solarketing. And it's, you know, out there for two reasons. One, to sort of educate people on, you know, what's going on with social selling, how can they embrace social selling, what is social selling. But the other side of it is I made sure that the entire book was written in, you know, 140 character or less sentences, and they're all tweetable. So that's going to empower people to go out and share that information and develop thought leadership. So I wanted to blend the, you know, the idea of gaining an education and learning about a topic with actually going out and becoming a thought leader in the topic as well. So very interested to see how that goes. It came out last week, and I've released the first version as an app book, which can be found for free at ThinkAha. That's T-H-I-N-K-A-H-A.
That's awesome, and I will definitely put that in the show notes and make sure that people can get access to that. The other thing I'd like is, Julio, if you could just tell all of our listeners where they could go and be social for you, and I'll be sure to include that in the show notes as well. Where can people be social with you?
Jeff, I'm all over the map, but the place that you can catch me all the time is on Twitter. So my Twitter handle is at Julio Visco. That's J-U-L-I-O-V-I-S-K-O. And I would love if everyone connected with me on LinkedIn as well. It's a really easy URL to remember. It's linkedin.com/in/social-selling.
Awesome. Julio, thank you so much for being on the show. I encourage everybody out there to reach out to Julio. He is honestly one of the nicest people I've ever met, and I think that's because you're from Canada. But additionally, you have such a good grasp on this that I would encourage anybody that is thinking about how to incorporate social into the way that they sell. You're not going to find anybody that's going to know it better and give you more practical, usable advice than this guy. So, Julio, thank you for being on the podcast. I can't wait to hang out with you in Chicago and host our networking dinner together and everything. It's going to be a really awesome time. But thank you for being on the show.
Hey, Jeff, you're a smart guy and a good guy. Thanks for
having
me.
Everybody out there, thanks so much. Have a great rest of the day. Thanks again for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed that episode of Conversations. Be sure to go over to iTunes or Stitcher and give us a rating. Tell us what you love about the show, what you hate about the show. And we hope you come back for our next episode. Take care.